Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Welcome, Ashley Hampton.
Yay. I'm excited.
Ashley is the co-founder and clinical director of Hampton House Counseling and the co-founder and executive director of Healing in the Margins.
Yes.
Through her clinical community and advocacy work, Ashley creates and amplifies healing-centered spaces for BIPOC, LGBTQIA, and other marginalized communities. Ashley is also a certified clinical supervisor and adjunct professor at Vanderbilt University, baby, where she supports the development of culturally responsive clinicians, thank God, and equitable mental health practices. She does it all. Welcome to But For Real.
I'm so excited.
Hey. A beautiful diva.
Yep.
Who does everything.
Not everything. I do like five things well.
Okay.
Does that really make sense? I don't do everything.
I kind of feel like that.
I really found a lane and I kind of stay in it.
I kind of love that.
I think
I can learn from that.
Valerie.
Valerie's like, I want to do 27
it's
things.
It's harder when you can do 27 things.
Correct. Can. Define can. Having the willpower.
I have a feeling that you can because you're a very creative person. I found that
she is.
People who are truly creative can do all of the things.
I think so.
I think so too.
Wow.
I knew at the moment I heard you sing. I said, that's the one. So there you go. Yeah, that one right there.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm so excited.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
I'm trying to be better about watching TV. I know that's a hot take. I should go outside and touch grass more.
Watch
but I'm
less
also
or watch more?
Watch more TV.
Yes, I love that.
Longer form content versus rotting on short form content all the time. So I've been watching Wayward. This was recommended from one of my besties from high school, Francesca. She was like, it's gag. I think you should watch it. It came out last year. I think it's like an 8-episode drama, horror. It's giving like troubled teen industry.
Ooh.
Fiction meets Stranger Things coded. Okay. Very interesting. There's Queer Rep, which I really loved because I wanted to be for my pride pick for the month.
How many seasons so far?
Just one.
And how many episodes?
8.
Manageable.
So totally manageable, like an hour or less a piece. So it's been nice just going home and like having a little show. But it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm not like a great judge of TV.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I don't know if I like something enough. I'm like, okay, like,
right.
This is fine for me. I'm not like a purist, mm-hmm. But it's kind of gag. So I like it.
Love that.
It's kind of like spooky. I'm trying to figure out why everyone's so weird. There's some mind control.
Now we're talking.
Like creepy white lady at this school that's hypnotized. Like it feels weird. So I'm liking it.
Okay. I don't know. Cool.
Yes.
What's your tea?
Ashley,
Okay, so I will randomly watch reality TV. There's only like two shows. But I like eight through the latest season of Married at First Sight.
You've seen it?
Never watched. Is that gag?
It is. And this season in particular is wild. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
Okay. I will check it out. Mine, I brought a show and tell, guys. So for our viewers, our people who are listening on video, you can see this gorgeous tarot deck by Joanna Powell Colbert called Gaian Tarot, Healing the Earth, Healing Ourselves. And is that not me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, my God.
I know.
With the little braid?
Shut up.
It's a gorgeous deck. Like, it is.
Oh, my God.
The cards are, it comes with this whole giant book. The cards are gold foil.
Oh, my God.
These are all these paintings that this woman spent 9 years creating. There's a lot of good diversity in the deck. There's animals. There's nature. Like, I'm obsessed.
Oh, this is so you.
So I have been studying my Gaian Tarot deck. Get ready for a reading.
Oh, my God. I'll leave that.
You're like, sit down. Seriously, I am loving it.
Ooh,
so I just had to bring
I'm obsessed.
The show and tell.
So pretty.
That's pretty. Right?
No, this is totally you in a deck.
Strength card. is number 8. Where is it? It is this.
Isn't she Gorgina, this little girl?
Wow.
With the lion.
Yes.
Okay. So I just had to share that with you guys.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
So this listener says, Dear M, Val, and Ashley, I have been out to my parents and my friends for a few years now, but my grandmother still doesn't know that I'm gay. We don't live in the same city, so whenever I see her, I feel pressured to come out to her, especially as time moves on and she gets older. I love her so much, and I feel like I've always been her favorite grandchild.
Okay.
T.
And I'm terrified that, I hope your cousins are all listening. I'm terrified that it will all change once she knows my identity and that I've been keeping this from her. I, of course, have real apprehension of letting her know who I am, as I feel she's not always been the most open and understanding. And the thought of her passing before she knows the real me is scary, but also freeing at the same time. How do I navigate these mixed feelings during Pride Month while still celebrating who I am with the people who do love and know the real me? Sincerely, over the river and through the woods to grandmother's closet, I go.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
That's perfect.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, Ashley, kick us off. Like, what do you think this listener needs to hear?
Okay, so I hear two things.
Correct.
I hear a longing to be known by someone that loves you and that you love back. And I hear like a responsibility to the gay community to come out and be all the way out that comes out during Pride.
During Pride. Yeah.
Which
the Pride pressure
cooker. I think we owe no one anything.
Right.
Ever. Especially something like that. So if this were me and I had those two feelings, I'm going to lean more to what feels like an actual need for me. Mm. What's my longing? What is it that I want? And if it's to be known, then I think that that's where I would go. Mm. And I feel like the idea of like, I wanted to tell her because I wanted her to know me because she loves me.
Yeah.
That's probably how I would lead it.
Mm. Yeah. I have no notes, nothing to add.
No, that's perfect.
That's what I would say. Like, I would be like, there's something I really want to tell you because I want you to know me.
I want you to know me.
And right. I know you love me.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner, but that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. And I just love that distinguishing between the different motivations, because I think that is so key with so many decisions that we are faced with, where it's like, okay, let me get really clear about the motives and what the drivers here for this.
I love that. I feel like also calling attention to some of the like Pride Month pressure cooker. I feel like what I've been talking to some clients about or who have been going through similar things or are just kind of coming in and saying like, oh my God, I feel like I just haven't been having a Pride Month. Like, I feel like I haven't been doing blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, like, when did this month become about making sure there's always something to do? Mm-hmm. Like, is the month not just about being? Can we just not make it joy. About being joy, who you are, like, leaning into that? So, you know, of course, this month, like, I've had friends that have come out during Pride because they've been like, holy shit, it's Pride. And this is the month. And this is, I don't want to, like, go on another year without some people in my life knowing who I am. And I don't think that it's a prerequisite to Pride Month till I have to make proclamations.
Now's the time.
Now's the time. Yeah, it's like, no, you can like do that whenever the fuck you want, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no time container on that. So, yeah, total mic drop from Ashley there. But like, listener, you're okay, baby. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you can tell your granny if you're the favorite. Yep.
Yeah.
And create the favorite.
You've already got some capital.
You have some skin in the game. So, keep listening and love ya.
Updates, because I'd love to know.
Right?
Yeah.
I wish. I'm like, actually, maybe send us updates.
Send us a follow-up email.
Show.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
Okay, let's hop on over to our DSM, where all versions of dysfunction, spirals, and meltdowns are welcome. Of course, today is our interview with Ashley, how she started spreading her magic, her fairy wings, all across Nashville. So, Ashley, one of the things that I pulled from the website and something that I just, because I know the people at Hampton House and love you all, but you talk about creating pathways for people who look, love, and move like us to receive care. What were the spaces that you wished existed for you when you were younger? And how has that shaped the spaces that you're building for marginalized communities today?
That, you know, when I was younger, like, if we're talking childhood, I feel like I grew up in a very affirming space. Mm-hmm. very creative space. So I didn't feel oppressed in those spaces. But I do think professionally, essentially every space that I've created in my work, I didn't have.
Yes.
You know, I didn't have a Black professor in grad school. I didn't have a brown professor in grad school. My supervisor was a very wealthy white woman. We couldn't have come from different planets. And so I think that when you don't learn from people like you, you're not taught how to support people like you, which is a detriment to the community that you're ultimately going to serve, right? Because our clients tend to mirror us in some way. Sometimes they don't. Every now and then you're like, how did you find me? But for the most part, there's a piece of us represented in them. And so for me, a lot of my learning, the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years was me learning with my clients. Yeah. And that's to their detriment. That's not really, like, it is what it is, but it's something that could have been avoided had there been more resources. So that's kind of why I do what I do in the very specific way that I do it.
And that's even you like learning on the job, even with the lived experience that you have. Like, and that's, I think, just points out how key it is that, like, whether you have the lived experience or not, people still need and deserve the professional training and support that you're talking
totally,
about.
Totally, because when we're talking about the intersection of like race and sexuality, my experience is going to be totally different than a Black person who grew up, you know, in a smaller town, for example. I just think that on paper, my experience might have looked like, I think a lot of people were like, oh, that, you know, there's a queer brown person and they're going to get me. And I'm lucky that I did, right? But our experiences are so, we're not a monolith. And so I think that is tricky too.
So a lot of people use words like safe and affirming, but those can mean very different things to different people and look very different in practice. So I wonder for you, what is a truly affirming space for Black, brown, and queer folks actually look and feel like when someone walks through that door?
I think that safety is not an afterthought. I think that it is from the ground up a part. So many people will reach out to me and they'll say, I want to have a diverse practice like yours. How did you do it?
Yeah.
Like, well, look at me, number one. Number two, it's not an after. It was the beginning. It was the origin. Mm-hmm. And so I think safety is something that is taught, but I also think it's something that's experienced. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm brown, I'm queer, and I have been unsafe to brown queer people. Mm-hmm. And the reason I know that, though, is because I've asked, right? I think there's a lot of, like, humility that precedes safety. Mm-hmm. And if the therapist isn't saying, like, how did this make you feel? If I do something that could cause harm, which I probably will, because I'm a person, I want to invite that in.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what shows true safety. It is the willingness to invite in clients, letting you know when you've made them feel unsafe.
Right.
That's actually really hard to do.
It is hard to do because of the inherent power differential, and not to mention all of just the sort of societal conditioning around people pleasing and authority and all of that too. But that's one of the things that we really try to do. Like, we have these customized feedback forms that people get after every session. Not everyone fills them out, but we have to normalize that from the very beginning. We tell them, this is what this is. This is why we do it. This is not about giving a random grade like you feel like you're doing at the doctor when you go. And just normalizing that, both, you know, in your team and as a leader, it's challenging, but it's important.
It is challenging. And I think most of us get into this profession because we care. We want to help people. And the idea that we could cause harm is just so unfathomable that we just want to avoid it.
Yeah.
But it is that avoidance that I think perpetuates the ongoing harm. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think of that. And when I think about, you said affirming, I think about, who do we share company with, right? I feel like your practice has been a practice that I didn't have to explain what Healing in the Margins was to at all. And you were just like, how can I support?
Sure.
How can I show up? And I think that is what true affirming looks like. Mm-hmm. Your clients know that you're supporting an organization that might support them or that might support their cousin. And I think that those things actually show who is truly affirming, because it's where your actions lie as well, not just what your words are saying.
Not just your Instagram feed.
Not just your Instagram feed, not just any of those things, but like truly the relationship with people in marginalized communities.
Yeah, and do you walk the walk?
Yeah.
Well said. You know,
it's actions are louder than words majority of the time.
With that, you've expanded just outside of clinical work and impact far beyond just the therapy room, creating partnerships. When I was on the website, I saw like your little directory being built up, which I thought was so cool. Just pulling in different businesses, like safe businesses, community allies, and of course, Healing in the Margins, a whole ass nonprofit. Why was it important for you to go bigger than therapy and focus on those kind of community ecosystems around Nashville and beyond?
Well, I think that I never set out to start Hampton House. I want to be transparent. Yeah. I also never set out to start Healing in the Margins. I do the work until I hit a roadblock, and then I am morally conflicted. And so
a need is here.
A need is here, and I see a need, and maybe I could come up with an idea to fix the need. Mm-hmm. And so Healing in the Margins was incredibly organic. It was cool. I have a practice with brown, black, and queer folks, but I'm the only one with EMDR training. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one with an advanced trauma training, and that's not the vibe. So the idea was, cool, we can create safety, but how do we affirm it and sustain it? And I think the only way that you can do that is by partnership and by support from people like you guys and from other people who see like, oh, this is a real need. Therapists need access to training. Therapists need access to trainings by people from communities that they're going to go on to serve. And so Healing in the Margins to me was and is absolutely necessary for the sustainability for brown, black, and queer people in mental health spaces. I truly do.
Mm-hmm. And what's so cool about it is y'all take the issue on from so many angles.
Yes.
Because it just, there's a need for it at each of those angles. So it's, the clinician training, but then there's the therapy fund, right?
Yes.
You know, I've heard of other cities that have sort of a similar type of therapy fund organization. And it's so interesting that, I mean, I would love for, I don't know how this would work, but you know, for another city like Memphis or whoever to learn from what y'all have done so that you don't have to do it for every city, because that's just impossible. Like,
well, it's not impossible if we scale to the way that we should. Mm-hmm. Healing in the Margins is endless. There is no ceiling that we'll reach. There's a personal ceiling that Ashley Hampton will reach.
Sure.
And Beth Hampton will reach. Mm-hmm.
But if we had the funding, there is no
city
in Tennessee, because we have clients in Chattanooga, in Memphis, in Knoxville. We have several people who are getting checks sent to Johnson City, all across Tennessee.
Okay, what about nationally?
Right. Well. Like I said, I found my lane. Let's see how we can make Tennessee work.
And other states should look at that and.
It's hard, though. Yeah. You know, I would never necessarily encourage everyone to do it because I think it is incredibly hard. I think Healing in the Margins works because I had been here for my whole life.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You stopped.
I've been a therapist for 15 years, and that's how I know the gaps.
Yeah.
If someone just came in and was like, oh, I want to provide, if they took the mission, I want to create change for brown, black, and queer folks, but they don't know what that actually looks like. It's so interesting because I think why it works is literally the experience of it working.
Right.
And it's not an easy investment.
No. Yeah. I mean, I always feel the same about just like so many people who've created something that works reasonably well. They're like, oh, well, other people want to create this, so I should be a business coach now and then I can make the real money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I could never tell someone how to replicate even what we've done here, because I'm like, I think it's just too many special sauce.
It's a part of you. Right. And like, I think that there are organizations who do a beautiful job of creating, you know, these things. But I think what we're hitting on is something that I haven't seen happen in the same Tennessee ever.
Yeah,
and it's new and it's hard, but it's working. And so it's super exciting.
Yeah.
There is no end.
And I think also that there's the scaling throughout the state totally realistic and doable if the funding is there, right? And the support for the woman power, et cetera. So that's totally possible. But I hear you kind of saying maybe not everything needs to scale infinitely. Like Healing in the Margins, I wonder if it's almost like certain types of social programs are better at these smaller chunks than like trying to scale something nationwide or something. You know, like I just wonder if it loses something. Yeah. The people in the community like know their place better.
I think so, but I actually don't know.
Sure.
Because I can only see this.
It probably hasn't been done at that scale.
Probably could.
Yeah.
Probably be impactful.
Yeah, right.
For a lot of
it would help.
It actually could change the world, but I'm focused on Tennessee right now. Yes. But I could say, I mean, I think that that's what's so important, though, is we are talking about a group of people, no matter what state you're in, who have historically not been a part of the mental health conversation.
Something like this is needed everywhere. Well, it's just a matter of, you know, how decentralized or centralized is that, right?
When I just think of, like, how, yes, the need for it everywhere, and, like, I think of when I'm just scrolling on social media or something, and I really dislike the, oh, these, like, you know, all you dumbass, stupid people in the South, when it comes to, like, voting, everyone just, like, shits on Southerners really hard, right? Because we're all racist and dumb and whatever. And I'm like, hey, like, sure, there are some people that certainly fit into, you know, if a shoe fits, babe, wear it. And for something, for healing in the margins to be happening in Tennessee, where there are queer people that still just don't think that they are allowed to be queer. There are Black people that are navigating, you know, racism in the South. It is so pertinent to have this space everywhere, and it quadruples the weight for me and how I think about it in the fact that this is happening here in Tennessee. Like, it's wild.
It is wild, and it is desperately needed.
Desperately needed.
And I think that the need matches the work, and correct. I think that that's why it's working.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Mm. So when people talk about marginalized communities, of course, a lot of the conversation, and it's very important to acknowledge all of the struggle.
Correct.
But then we can lose the joy, the celebration, the abundance. So I'm curious, like, what you have witnessed in Black and queer communities of that joy, celebration, and abundance.
It's so interesting because, you know, you said what made you want something bigger. And I kind of hate the word bigger because I don't think of it as bigger. I think of it as it is a joy that I didn't feel seeing clients one-on-one. It is a comfort, a camaraderie, a community that I didn't know for 12 years until I did this work. And so what I love about community as opposed to one-on-one is we're not alone. And I literally see that every single day. My sense of community has flourished being in this space where I'm connecting with other Brown, Black, and queer folks because we realize that that is necessary for our sustainability and survival. And in my work now, I really do try to encourage my community to not live in a silo. That's what I try to do with therapists. That's what I'm trying to do, you know, with our mental health community, because I think that for a therapist like myself, it is the grind. You're seeing 20, 30 people a week because you want to serve your communities, but you also need to live, which means you have to work more. And what happens when you work more is you don't get to dream. You don't get to connect. You don't get to gather. You don't get to have joy. And that was my life until Hampton House and Healing in the Margins. And so, I'm happy that I'm on this side because I do see that it exists and I see the richness that there is in our communities. But I think it's not accessible to everyone just because of the way we've kind of had to survive. That makes any sense.
Sure, it does. Yeah, I think of just that piece. And then, you know, just like for you as Ashley, like a Black queer woman in the South, business owner, the first business in Nashville of this type, right? To be Black queer woman owned of what you're doing. What have you learned about the empowerment of that and also the vulnerability of leading openly as yourself, navigating all of this?
I think that it is incredibly vulnerable to be a first and an only. I think it's incredibly vulnerable to be a bold first and only, right? I think it's incredibly vulnerable to show up as you are, no matter who you are.
Correct.
But I do think in our industry, it's hard because there is a way that it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're doing something different, do you like change?
No.
Do you like change? Yeah, you do. You see, it goes back to that beginning good at everything. See, they're correlated.
But this going, what you said, this is the way it's always been. There's a book that's like 40 years old that one of my professors told me about called, it's about our field. Even the rat was white, like psychology research. Even the rat was white.
Exactly. And so people don't trust what's new.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I feel a lot of, you know, side eye. I'm looked at a lot. I'm quizzed a lot. Yeah. Who is she? What's she about? Yeah. My least favorite question is like, how do you do so many things? I'm like, it's not to me. It's way less than seeing 30 clients a week. I'm going to tell you that.
Sure.
Like energetically, sure. Spiritually, physically.
Oh my God, it's I'm
like, and it's also like low key offensive to clinicians who do or in the trenches doing 30 hours a week at a place where they're not getting any of their needs met and having to show up. And so I think that that's been the hardest part is you do have to prove yourself.
Constantly.
Yeah. But luckily, I've never been one to care much about what people think. And so therefore, it has worked in my favor. And the power of it is the positive is I do feel I can actually see the help that I'm doing.
Sure.
You know, as a therapist, you don't always see the ways in which the space you share is impactful.
That's true.
I can see the impact. And that is so exciting.
You can track when you are doing that kind of work in a way that, yeah, it's important to a degree to be interested and curious about improving therapy outcomes, of course. But the kind of work you're doing with Healing in the Margins, there are real outcomes you can track. You can track how many people were supported. There's so many things that you can see the tangible impact of the work.
And it's beyond me,
which
is actually incredibly empowering. The pressure is off.
Yeah.
I don't feel responsible. And like to that point, like last year, we did a brain spotting training and we tracked from the participants over 595 sessions happened of brain spotting.
Amazing.
Therapy treatment that people would not have had access to before because of something like Healing in the Margins.
Love it.
That's really cool.
So if we can fast forward 10 years... And Nashville has become more of a city where Black, Brown, and queer folks feel more supported, safe, able to thrive. What would be different? What would we have gotten right?
I think that there would be more visibility for our community. Mm-hmm. I think that Brown, Black, and queer spaces would be amplified more. I think we would see them more, and I think we would celebrate with them more. I think that we would feel safe. But I really think the biggest piece would be the representation and not just in the community with the community, but by everyone on the periphery as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe we've gone national. I know 10 years is a long time.
Now you've
made me wonder. The seed is planted.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Just thinking of, 10 years. That's a long time.
We created a mission statement, big picture. Like, what is that vision? And we framed it in the number of we want to impact 4,000 family trees in the next 10 years. Because when you think about every individual that we serve and the ripple effect of that, like those are family trees that are permanently changed.
Beautiful. I love that. Being grounded in something. I don't know. It like helped. I just really think of what you just said of like when you have space to dream. That really just like has tickled my brain. I'm like, wait, I'm like, I need to dream more. I would like to dream more. Just like keep thinking about, you know, the future and like what's important
and what could be possible.
What you just said, that ripple, when you're one-on-one, you don't think of the beyond. But the ripple actually is the impact. That is the legacy. That is the like sustainability of everything that we do as therapists. So I do think that's beautiful. I love that.
There's a Lao Tzu quote that I have on the website that I'm obsessed with, that if there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there's to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there's to be peace in the cities, there must be peace in the homes. And if there is to be peace in the homes, there must be peace in the heart. But so much of our individualistic mental health culture doesn't really bridge that gap. Yes. And so I think that's something that for in your work and in our work is just so key is like, yes, even if we're just sitting in a room one-on-one with someone, that matters, that work matters, and there is a ripple effect. But we almost have to be more intentional. We can't just hope for that. We have to bring that into the ethos of what we're doing.
And I think it is so much, to me, it's energetic, right? It's when you're out and you're doing your job one-on-one, but then it goes out, that person leaves here feeling more grounded or joyous. So then they're, they go out and it is true. And I think that those things all matter.
Mm-hmm. I always say to my clients, I'm like, we're raising trailblazers, you know, like you yourself are raising yourself to be the trailblazer of your family, to change your family tree. I'm learning how to do that for myself. You all learn how to do that for yourself. And then when we're all doing that together, that has to mean something,
absolutely.
You know, that has to mean something.
Okay. Being met with bullshit on bullshit, depending on who you're talking to. I just can't even imagine probably sometimes like what you have to navigate in terms of being a business owner and just, yes, some of these questions. And part of that is, I think sometimes a lot of people coming from a place of ignorance, misunderstanding, fear. What's something that people outside of Black, queer, brown communities often misunderstand about what support actually does look like and would mean for marginalized communities? Like, what do people misunderstand and get wrong 9 times out of 10 that you're like, hey, change this?
I think the assumption that they know what support looks like.
Right.
You know, I think if we ask someone, how can I support you? What ways can I show up for you? I think that that gives the person actual chance to like explore, oh, well, what is needed here, as opposed to assuming that you already know. So I would think that that would be a huge one.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I think people don't do that because a lot of times the answer is, well, I don't know what support I need because I've never been asked before. I am like 4 years in now. Now I know what I need. Mm-hmm. If you had asked me 2 years ago, how can I support you? I'd have been like,
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
But now I'm like, I need this, because mm-hmm. I've actually have the space to think about what do we need. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a part of it. Yeah. It's like asking the question, but giving the person actual time and space to really sit with it and then following it.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. What is one of the things you're most proud of that Healing in the Margins has accomplished so far?
I'm so proud of everything. Healing in the mm-hmm. Margins is my greatest accomplishment. Professionally.
And you should be.
I am obsessed with Healing in the Margins.
Us too.
But last year we funded over $80,000 in therapy across the state. And that's for a 3-year-old organization. Yeah. That's like insane.
No, that's insane. Yeah.
And I am so proud of that. And it just lights me on fire to think about what we could do if we had more, if we had more resources for support and things like that. So I am incredibly proud. I know that it's just going to keep growing. My pride.
So Ashley, at the end of our DSM segment, we like to leave people with, but for real, what do you want to leave people? Say but for real, and then whatever you want to leave people with.
I mean, my immediate but for real, go look at Healing in the Margins. Like, that's maybe kind of the biggest but for real is go check out Healing in the Margins. Please understand, if you are Black, brown, and queer and living in the South, that there's options for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry that you felt like that there's never been an option for you before, or that nobody wanted to make room for the option. Like, look at Ashley and Beth and just everything that they've done to make an option. Ultimately, I think my but for real is to Black, brown, and queer people during this month, where it's just like you deserve as much care and support as you can presently fathom. And after you have some spaciousness and you understand what that support is, you deserve that support. You deserve somebody following up and taking care of you and giving you options and letting you know that you have options.
Yeah. And I would say, if you're listening to this from a part of the country that is not Tennessee, that does not yet have a Healing in the Margins.
Correct.
You know, still look it up and look at your community and get curious about where you can help each other start to meet these needs and fill these gaps. Because if Ashley and Beth can do this, you know, then whatever your community is can do it too.
And I would say, but for real, on the other side of healing, if there's space for it, I think there is infinite joy and happiness and connection. So, but for real, do your work.
And now our musical segment. Now that's what I call Okay, where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
Okay, so now we have our little musical segment called Now That's What I Call where usually Emerson and I share a song from our respective generations, school each other a little bit. But when we have a guest, we listen to their song of choice. So you can find the songs on our playlist in the show notes, and we'll do a little live reaction after we listen to it. But Ashley, tell us why you picked the song You Noticed by Lola Young.
One, I love her.
Isn't she tea?
But I haven't heard of anything.
You know, and I'm so messy. Oh, okay, maybe.
Your mom recommended that one.
Oh, yeah.
We listen to our mom's recommendations always around here.
You noticed.
Yes. Well, one, it came on the playlist when I was filling out the form. Two, I think that so often the work that we do goes unnoticed. Mm-hmm. I think the parts of ourselves that are sometimes the most special go unnoticed. And so I am in a season of being noticed, and that is new, and it is deeply beautiful. And I think that everyone deserves to be noticed. And so that's why.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And that song gets me every time.
Let's watch the video. Okay, so the video was just her spinning on a red floor. So
that was interesting.
But the song kind of tea was fabulous.
I think what I love about the idea of it is, like, it's the really small ways that we show up that actually make the biggest impact in our lives, like cleaning our kitchen, painting it, brushing our hair. Like, those things become like, that's just what you do. But the reality is, if you are struggling, those things are the hardest things to do.
Yes.
And so I think noticing those small things, it's that ripple, right? Those small actions lead to bigger healing.
And noticing them in each other. Noticing, like, I think it goes such a long way when you just, you know, even like a client, for instance, they come in and they've gotten a haircut. Like, oh, wow, yeah, I love your haircut. It looks, and they're, you know, to feel noticed in that way, like, is really special.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
I love it.
I love it.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
So mine is small, but we're in, like, sticky ball, sweaty summer, full swing of Tennessee. And so I'm a Cancer, and so it's my season. Holla. Almost. We're almost there. We're still in Gemini right now. But I am always illuminated at how bad I need to be in the water. I'm happy. I'm a little fish in the water. I'm just like, yay. So I've been swimming more, and I just feel healed. I'm like, even though this is chlorinated waters, baby, I am okay with this. Like, it just feels so nice to move my body and just to feel like, oh, just when you just get that first little cold plunge almost and you're just adjusting, it just feels so good. So I've just been enjoying some movement, swimming. Cancer needs her water. I'm just a little crab. I've been enjoying. It's a pool girl summer for me.
Yeah. What about you, Ashley?
Oh, we had good news on Mother's Day. We got a letter from someone from Healing in the Margins who was thanking, you know, the organization for supporting her. And it was her first ever Mother's Day. And she's like in her 50s. Wow. Where she felt empowered to actually be the matriarch of her family.
Ooh, wow.
Ripple effect.
Yes.
That's tree, amazing. The family tree. So
I love it.
That's always so nice. We love hearing from people who are getting to do the work. So,
oh, amazing.
That's amazing.
So mine is, I was in Denver for a conference last week. And on Saturday, I went to the National Animal Rights Day. They had, I think, in 26 cities.
Wow.
We did not have one here in Nashville this year, but they did have one in Denver where I was. So I went, lifted my little butt out to this animal sanctuary, and they had several amazing speakers, including, okay, first of all, the First Gentleman of Colorado, like me sitting 15 feet from Marlon Rees, who's Jared Polis's husband. And like this man, I mean, that's not even what I wanted to talk about, but he was so impressive, the amount of policies that he's pushed through for these animals. Incredible. But the speaker that I wanted to share about, because this is something you all need to go and download, is David Crawford, who founded two apps. One of them is called Animal Help Now, and one of them is called Pet Help and Rescue. So I'm going to read a little bit about both of these apps. Animal Help Now has been assisting in animal emergencies since 2011.
Wow.
And 2012, they expanded their wildlife functionality nationally. So it's the country's and world's first nationwide wildlife emergency app. So a bird hits your window and you don't know where to go to help this bird. You go on the app and they will connect you with your nearest local resource for that.
So whatever happens, Animal Help now provides immediate and appropriate assistance for any wildlife emergency coast to coast. Their database includes more than 3,700 helpers, including wildlife rehabilitators, rescues, hotlines, and veterinarians who treat wildlife. And they offer access to businesses that humanely resolve conflicts with wildlife like raccoons in attics, skunks under porches. And it serves not only people who are trying to help animals, but by extension, serves the animals themselves and also animal emergency professionals. I just love this. And then, so that's been around for a long time. And then after Colorado in 2021 had the Marshall Fire, that was a very bad wildfire. And he was just feeling like really distraught afterwards, like so many pets, you know, die in emergencies like that. And he was able to get their pets out, but he said, we need to create something where more pets can be helped in situations like this. So he created Pet Help and Rescue. So Pet Help and Rescue is a free app that is designed to help nearby neighbors evacuate companion animals when disasters strike. So it can connect with trusted contacts and neighbors quickly and easily, so that if you're not at home or able to get home when disaster strikes, it is a way to quickly and easily alert all your trusted contacts that you need help. So this just incredible. Even in situations that are non-emergency, a delayed plane, a flat tire, a trip to urgent care, if the person unexpectedly can't make it home to take care of their animals, this app can help them.
I love that.
So go and download their free apps. Yeah, I love it. So that's what I got. And now we're going to close it out with our rapid fire Q&A. Pew, pew, pew. Ashley, if you could have dinner with anyone dead or alive, who would it be?
Oprah Winfrey.
I mean, hell yes.
That's a great answer.
Do you have a favorite Pride Month tradition?
I am deep in Pride. So, I mean, I love the parade.
Yes.
So I guess the parade.
I think of you all.
You want to do the parade?
I think of you all when I think of the parade.
So hot. It's so hot. I'm going to be 7 months pregnant.
That's, that's true.
I literally
have my lost mom, my right to complain.
My mom is like, I think you might need to like ride in one of the cars. And I'm like, Mom, that won't be fun.
We make you a float.
I know. I'm like, you'll can I just float. I'm like, I want to have fun, Mom.
You should be on the float.
The parade is a lot of fun for me.
Oh, I love it. Okay, what is one of your favorite things that your daughter has ever said, either sweet or ridiculous?
Okay, I'm gonna tell you this.
No, wow.
So the other day, I was asking her if she was excited about her dance recital, and she was in the back, and she goes, not excited about anything. And I said, oh, well, baby, you know, she's four. I said, well, honey, that sounds like depression. And if you've lost excitement over everything, you might have to go to therapy. You think that's something you might want to do? And she goes, fuck no. And I cried laughing instantly. Fuck no. We did some investigating, and I think the fuck no was not about going to therapy, but working. She thought she'd have to go to work at the office.
Well,
which is even funnier.
Which is even better.
She's like, me working?
Are you out of your mind?
She's like, you want me to be a therapist?
She's like, what? I'm not ready yet.
Wait, she's my hero.
She's honestly mine too.
Oh my God.
I know.
Okay. Ashley, if your life had a theme song, what would it be?
Ooh, that is so hard.
It is kind of a big
life had a theme song, what would it be?
Or you can just pick any song on the soundtrack of your life.
True. Because I think life is a soundtrack.
It is. It's a whole soundtrack.
It is.
There's like 1,000 songs of me in
sure.
the ones.
Yeah. What's but one of them?
Something that you like, oh God, it's just so many. I mean, that's like so hard.
Sure. You can tell us later.
Well, I mean, like, I'm thinking of, like, so many.
Yeah.
Your brain is, like, I mean, thinking of 8,000 songs.
I need to think about, like...
I need to think about this.
I know. Like, if I were to, you know, what's my walk on stage song? What's my...
Oh, well, if it's a walk on stage song, I love All I Do Is Win by DJ Khaled. I like, really want to walk on a stage to that song. Well, no matter what.
I mean, that's
it's
everything.
Not really. It's like it's not really true necessarily. I don't always win,
but it's hype.
But it's the it's idea of it. That, you know,
that's a good one.
That might be it.
Okay.
One.
Lastly, what message would you give to little Ashley if she were sitting next to you today?
You didn't peak in high school. Keep going.
And hallelujah.
After high school, I was sure it was the end. So I think that would be it.
And I don't think anyone listening to this podcast peaked in high school. So good for us.
And thank God. Because
did
wow,
y'all feel that way though?
No, I panicked that I peaked in college though.
Okay.
I had a moment where I was like, fuck, did I peak in college?
Oh,
I mean, no. Jury's still out. I think. I'm 3 years.
No, I'm
more than 3 years post-grad. I'm 3 years post-grad for my master's degree. I'm terrified. Maybe I peaked in grad school. Who knows? I don't know. I definitely didn't peak in grad school.
The best is yet to come.
Exactly.
Ashley, thank you so much for being here.
Amazing. Thank y'all. I love you guys.
Come back
so
to
much.
See us.
Bye. This has been another episode of But For Real, hosted by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Volt Productions. But For Real is produced by the Gaia Center for Embodied Healing. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching and other programs for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at But For Real Pod. But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment. Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy about sharing our opinions here on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. See you next time, bestie.